just run an example to show that the child also knows there are clear red lines.
Yeah.
As much as we can, we make red lines based on the Sharia. Whatever is haram is obviously the main red line that we need to have. And then things that are harmful or things that are related to social etiquettes, etc.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to the difference between a father and
mother.
A mother, one of the places where it manifests a lot is in how we deal with a child in relation to these rules and regulations or these expectations and the red lines. But as I mentioned, firstly, that both the parents are in synchrony with this. So they should have talked with each other, and the child should also know that both mom and dad are aware of this expectation, and they're aware of the red lines as well. And that is how the family works.
Mm-hmm.
However, the side that will be putting out these expectations or putting out these red lines and ensuring that this happens is the role of the father.
All right.
The father plays the role of that strength, that authority, that final
power.
The power or the final decision making basically mm-hmm. rests with the father. And in a stable, in a very balanced Islamic family, this is very clear.
Okay.
The role of the father is, the father says which are the red lines. The father makes those red lines and ensures that the family kind of has this red lines in place.
Okay. What else? I'll ask you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam said, Allah will be merciful to his servant for his intense love for his child.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We're talking about the roles of parents, a father and a mother, in the life of a teenager. Brother, you said that the role of a father should be specified. It should be clear that father is the main authority, the main decision maker of the family.
And at the same time, as you mentioned, the father's role is this strength and the final decision, basically. On the other side, the mother's role is to kind of play the loving, the gentleness, the place where
Sobel.
There is more softness, basically.
Okay.
Right? That covers the aspect of the kind of emotions.
Yeah.
Right. Now, let me make this very, very clear, and I don't want any misunderstanding to happen over here. We're not saying that father plays a ruthless, violent role and the mother plays a very emotional kind of role. No, that's not what we're saying.
Okay.
The father also has to show a lot of love, has to show a lot of kindness, a lot of gentleness. And at the same time, the mother has to also be very firm and very stable.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be the case that children should go to their mom to break all the rules, basically.
Yes.
That never happens, right? The point is not this. The point is that the kind of aspect and the kind of attitude and the kind of role is defined in a family. And this is seen by the children. They
yes.
see that this happens. But they also get the same amount of love from the dad. And at the same time, they don't break rules because mom said so or because
yes.
mom will allow to rules break. Mom doesn't allow the rules to be broken. But mom allows that emotional aspect to be covered. If there's a need for an explanation, for example, there's a need for a shoulder to cry on, you usually go to your mom, for example.
Yes.
Again, I emphasize, it doesn't mean you don't go to your dad, right? The kind of the roles are naturally formed like this. And you find that this is the kind of very stable house that will bring about very confident children. One of the aspects and one of the, I would say, the challenges that we face today is that when these roles are mixed up, you find that a child, when he enters teenagers, they are of very weak personalities.
They're not confident.
They're not confident, they don't have self-esteem, they don't know where they stand, they don't know how to express their personalities. And one reason, I'm not saying the only reason, but one of the reasons is because at home there's an imbalance. There's massive decisions and authority that the mother takes when she's not
All
supposed
right.
to. And at the opposite side, the father plays no role in the family, completely quiet figure within the family. This leads to...
Dominated by a female.
Exactly. And this leads to a boy, for example, who's growing up to be very
weak
in his personality.
Okay.
Right? Unable to make decisions, unable to stand on their feet, be independent, unable to aim for high things, be very low in confidence. At the same time, as girls lacking this need for that support from a manly figure, not having the father's support and the father's love and respect for a daughter, leads to them also being very weak of character. So this All is right. a very important point that we need to take care and keep in mind when dealing with children.
Okay. So, these were very important things that parents need to keep into consideration while they are dealing with teenagers. You said that if a woman is dominant at home and father has no authority, both whether it's a boy or a girl who are in their teens, they will develop into weak personalities, and parents definitely need to take care of that. Well, that was all for today. Thank you so much, brother, for joining us. Thank you so much, dear listeners, for being with us. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. In case you have any questions for us or any suggestions, comments for a program, please feel free to contact us on englishradio@irib.ir. You can also search us on our social media platforms by just searching Call of Islam Radio. In case you want to listen to our programs again, you can go back to our official website. That's www.parstoday.com. Until another session, fi amanillah, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returns upon rest.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. السلام عليك يا سار الله in shock as you prepare to die. Everything you gave without complaint. You died a tragic death, but you did not die in vain. Hussein, Hussein, Hussein. Hussein, Hussein, Hussein. Hussein, Hussein, Hussein.
This is for a better life. For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Dear listeners, my sisters and brothers from all around the world, welcome to For a Better Life. This is IRIB English Radio. I hope wherever you are, you're doing well. Welcome to another session of Literature Engaged with the Religion. So we were discussing the story of Ashura and what happened in Karbala. And we talked about the literature that has been enriched with so much of poetry and stories that are so passionate and so full of emotions. These poetry are usually in the form of elegies or in the form of what they call as lamentations or something that is mournful and has got the characteristics of the tragedy in itself as well. So in the previous session, we went through a piece of a book that I introduced to you. It is Karbala and Ashura by Ali Hussein Jalali. And we said that there are plenty of incidents in this book that you could see different aspects of human nature that has been clearly outlined for you. As the reader, when you go through the pages of this book, you would see plenty much of nice features attributed to Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam. Of course, it is not just attributed, it is the truth. But through the words of an author, of a poet, who has not been there, perhaps because the writer of this book has actually gone through 14 centuries further of that incident of who's been writing this. So after 14th century, still there are some poets and writers who could do plenty much of justice to what happened there. They use their emotions, their power of writing in order to write such beautiful pieces. Well, you see, in past, the people who study literature are familiar with the idea of muses. Poets and writers believed that there are some sort of muses that would come to their help. And then through the use of those muses, through the benefit and blessing of those muses, these writers and poets would fall into a sort of a slip, and then they would write down whatever that comes to their mind. But what happens in Islamic heritage is that there is no muse, and all is the power of the writer and of the poet that has been bestowed upon him as a blessing by Allah himself. So we believe that when such beautiful words and poems and melodies come out, there must be a spiritual power behind it. Of course, God has provided these people with a sort of blessing that is not very much common for every single person. That was just a point for the poets and the writers of these sort of spiritual pieces that are full of emotion and that show you so much regarding the human nature and human essence. Allah, Allah, Subhanallah, Allah. Allah, walhamdulillah, Allah, Allah. This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Allah, Allah, walhamdulillah, oh, ya Allah, subhanallah, Allah. You can listen to us at parstoday.com/en. Allah, ya Allah, subhanallah. If you have any suggestion, our email is englishradio@irib.ir. So now let's go back to the piece that I read for you. It was about Shimr coming to Imam Hussein alayhi salam's camp and calling upon his relatives who are Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas and his brothers, because they had a sort of a relativity between them. So he wanted to give them clemency, and then Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas just rejected him. Of course, there would be no shock that he would reject him, because he is the most loyal brother in the world. If loyalty had an image, then it would have been manifested itself in the picture of Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas alayhi salam. Aside from his loyalty, we could see the manner of a brother toward his brother. When he has been called by Shimr, he didn't answer him at the first place, because he knew that his brother is there, and of course he had got nothing to do with that guy. So what happened is that he listened to his brother, and if it wasn't about his brother's order to go and see what he's going to say, he would have never gone out of that camp in order to have that negotiation with that guy. Of course, it was not a negotiation, because this brother's point of view was totally clear, and he knew where he's standing, and he would have never compromised his beliefs and his love that he had for his brother with any sort of clemencies. So he was the one who was about to back his brother up. He was the power of his brother, and he was actually the thing that brought all his army together. So he was the strength of his army. Therefore, it is very obviously that he would have never listened to that clemency sort of a thing and negotiation that happened in there. But it was just an answer to his brother's call, you know. Imam Hussein alayhi salam asked him to go, and he went there. This is not the first time that the manner of a brother is clarified. We see throughout their life, he has never addressed his brother as brother, but as just calling him by his name. Since he's his imam, he's trying to just respect him as a obedient brother who knows that his brother is the imam of every single creature in this world. So much of respect and so much of manner toward his brother shows how respectful and how full of modesty sort of a person he was. So as you can see through literature, so much of these sort of manners have been passed down to us. So the literature of Ashura is not just a matter of telling you a story that happened 14th century ago. It is more of that. It is a school of thought. It is teaching you so much of things. So it is not just a mournful poem that you hear and you shed tears upon it. It is a school of thought that makes you think. It is just like enlightening every single creature in order to have insight. And through those tears that comes to your eyes, you start thinking about the truth behind the story that happened in there. As I just told you, these poets have got this spiritual power in order to share with us this spiritual point of views. So at the same time that they are so touching, so moving, and so heartbreaking, and they cause those tears to gather in your eyes, at the very same time, these poems are meant to make you think and dig deeper and go between the lines of every single part of this story and learn. Because, you know, these stories are not... In literature, we have these didactic form of writings that would teach you very much directly. But what happens in the stories like the story of Karbala is that it is not didactic in a direct way. You go through that story with all your heart, and then you get the main ideas through a journey that you already have been so emotional, and you even have tears upon your cheeks. So it happens by the way of your spirit, by the way of your soul and your heart. And that's the beauty of the literature of Ashura. So this is all the time that we had for today. Thank you for listening. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share.
in the limelight.
Britain's out of brace for a recession that will see five consecutive quarters of contraction and a decline in household incomes of 5% by 2024, the biggest fall since records began more than half a century ago. We now present you an article written by The Guardian columnist Jonathan Friedland. The piece is titled, Be Warned, Inflation Could Take British Politics to a Very Dark Place Indeed. Winter is coming. The Bank of England says so. Pick your measure of the economic gale that is heading this way, deepening a chill that's already biting hard. The Bank of England says inflation will reach 13%, shrinking the value of wages, making everything more expensive, starting with eating and heating, forcing yet more people to decide whether to starve or shiver. Britain's out of brace for a recession that will see five consecutive quarters of contraction and a decline in household incomes of 5% by 2024, the biggest fall since records began more than half a century ago. Of course, all of this will hit hardest those with the least. One in five UK households will be left with no savings at all by 2024. Meanwhile, the Centre for Cities says inflation is as much as 30% higher in the towns and cities of northern England, thanks to poor home insulation and a car dependency that forces people to shell out more on petrol. You don't have to be a strict economic materialist of the old school to know all this will shape our politics, in ways both deep and shallow. Start with the latter and the current contest to pick Britain's next Prime Minister, a process of anointment mysteriously delegated to a select priesthood of 100,000 or so Britons who are anything but representative of the country whose fate they hold in their hands. By rights, the Conservative Party leadership race should be convulsed by the warning from Threadneedle Street, though of course the two contenders hardly needed recent forecasts to know the United Kingdom is already in a grave cost-of-living crisis. Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak should be preparing themselves and their party for the extremely tough task one of them will face in less than a month. But that's not how it is. Instead, Liz Truss continues to serve up soothing fantasy talk of tax cuts, even as she splashes the cash with spending promises on everything from defence to doctors' pensions. Cakeism, most famous exponent, may be in his final days as Prime Minister, but his doctrine lives on in Liz Truss. Rishi Sunak likes to pose as Mr. Sensible, insisting that immediate tax cuts would merely put fuel on the fire of inflation. But he is engaged in his own form of panda politics, telling the Tories' electorate whatever rubbish they long to hear. Unluckily for Rishi Sunak, we now have video evidence of quite how low he is prepared to sink in that endeavour, and how right-wing he actually is. In a garden in Tunbridge Wells in Kent, he boasted to local Tories of his efforts as Chancellor to reverse Treasury formulas that shoved all the funding into deprived urban areas, rather than to move deserving communities like theirs. That's right. It's Tunbridge Wells that needs the help. Nationally, surely, it will be a different story. You'd think no governing party presiding over an economic cataclysm of this order could hope to be re-elected. Runaway inflation, imminent recession, mortgages up, incomes down. Every political handbook says those are the circumstances in which incumbents get walloped by the voters. Keir Starmer should be miles ahead of the Conservative alternative, whoever it is. And yet, look at the recent opinion poll that showed that, in a match-up of Keir Starmer versus Liz Truss, it is Truss who is ahead by 2 percentage points. Labour is in front in other surveys, of course, but given this climate, it should be out of sight. Still, with an economic shock of this order, the impact will be felt far beyond Westminster and electoral politics. Deep in the Western folk memory is the knowledge of where hyperinflation can lead. Berlin wheelbarrows full of worthless banknotes as the precursor to Hitler. But what about a steep rise in inflation that is not on that Weimar level, but is a hike all the same? What will that do to Britain's politics? A rapid consequence could be a change in the public attitude towards the war in Ukraine. The most obvious cause of the current inflation surge is the rise in oil and gas prices, triggered in part by Russia's special operation in Ukraine. Standing with Kiev and sanctioning Moscow has come at a cost paid by regular people on the forecourt and in their heating bills. Up to now, Britons, along with most Europeans and Americans, have been solid in their support for Ukraine. But as inflation bites harder, they could shift, with new pressure on Kiev to end the war in any way, if that's what it takes to get prices back down. Public discontent may find another outlet. The first signs of the kind of disobedience movement that greeted the poll tax in 1990 are emerging, with a Don't Pay campaign urging consumers to refuse to settle their energy bills until the companies lower their prices. Energy retailers will stress that they are not the same as energy extractors such as BP, which recently announced it had tripled its quarterly profits to £7 billion, but few will be in the mood to make that distinction. An inflation rise of this order travels across class lines. Working people struggle because a galloping inflation rate turns even a wage increase into a cut. Meanwhile, the middle classes see any savings shrink before their eyes. If they are homeowners, their mortgage bills will soar, potentially out of reach. And when houses start getting repossessed, fear turns into fury. Where does that anger go? Guardian readers might hope it is directed at the act of self-harm that's made our current woes so much worse. I asked Albrecht Ritschl, Professor of Economic History at the London School of Economics, what single move the British government could make to alleviate the pain. The reply came, suspend Brexit for 20 years. He knows that's not going to happen, but he explains that today's crisis is not one of demand, but one of supply. There's just not enough stuff to meet demand, thanks in part to the post-COVID blockages in the global supply chain. In Britain, that's exacerbated because Britons can no longer import European goods as freely or as cheaply as before. In that context, policymakers are left with a question of distribution, how to share out the finite, indeed shrinking, amount that we have. The priority surely has to be with those who simply cannot afford to live. Restoring the £20 uplift to universal credit would be a start. But Professor Ritschl says, if you want to give something to the poor, then you have to do it like Robin Hood and take from the rich. In other words, not the tax cuts that Liz Truss is promising, but tax increases on the wealthiest. A wealth tax, a benefits rise, and a rethink on Brexit. There would be some comfort in imagining those as the consequences of this crisis. But I wouldn't hold your breath. Instead, memories stir of the last such inflation hike in the 1970s. That decade brought a surge in political violence and a rise in support for the racist far right in the form of the National Front. Under Boris Johnson, the Conservative Party has shifted towards a nationalist populism that Liz Truss seems unlikely to jettison. That creed is already of an ugly hue, but it could darken, especially when winter comes.
This is A to Z, an introduction into Husseini lifestyle. Today's lesson, the lifestyle of Imam Hussein. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone, you're listening to A to Z from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. And today we're talking about the lifestyle of a very important person. We're talking about the lifestyle of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam, who was the grandson of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. I would like to send my sincere condolences to you for the arrival of the month of Muharram, for the Matidum anniversary of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salatu wassalam. Now, when you're talking about lifestyle of Al-Imam Al-Hussein, we're talking of a very prominent example. We're talking about something that could serve as an example to anyone who understands it, anyone who reads it, anyone who comprehends the lifestyle of this particular personality. The life of Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam is the most prominent example among the purified Imams alayhi salam, because it is beyond the limits of time and space, and it has manifested the highest human values that inculcate in every human heart. It inculcates in every human heart not just anything, but a sign of greatness and illuminates their path of action. In fact, the biography and martyrdom of His Eminence alayhi salam contains such astonishing topics in whole history of Islam that came into being and the Muslims and other communities have not seen anything else presenting human values in such a clear way as the Holy Imam alayhi salam had done on the plains of Karbala. So we have a lot to study on the events of Karbala. We have a lot to study from the personality of Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein is indeed a prominent example that every one of us should sit down and study and understand, because through studying his lifestyle, by understanding his lifestyle, it makes us better, it will improve our lives, it will improve our day-to-day life activities.
السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله
وعلى أرواح النبي.
Welcome back. You are listening to A to Z from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host Hussein Hinzano, and we are talking about the lifestyle of Al-Imam Hussein and how we can benefit from it, how we can gain from this prominent example. On the basis of which faith in God, contentment and submission to His command have never been explained such beautifully anywhere else. And this unbounded faith is the special quality of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam. They all have this particular aspect, and their followers, through which they obtained precedence over all the martyrs of the world, they were absolutely sincere in their defense and in the confrontation for the sake of truth. And none of them had any material motive. For example, His Eminence Al-Imam Al-Abbas alayhi salam. For example, His Eminence Abbas alayhi salam, who was the closest person to Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam, and the one who was very closely related to him. In this incomparable loyalty, he did not have any motive due to brotherhood and relationship to the Imam. Rather, he took steps for the sake of faith and defense of Islam. He was defending Islam. He was defending the faith. He was doing it for the sake of faith. He was doing it for the sake of Islam. And His Eminence, alayhi salam, peace of Allah be upon him, has introduced these aims in special poetry, well known for its eloquence, in the following way. By Allah, even if you cut off my right hand, I will continue to defend my religion and my faith in the truthful truthful Imam of the pure and trustworthy Prophet. Why is Abbas saying this? Well, he's saying that inasmuch as he was defeated in the fight, he came into the fight. He fought so many soldiers, he brought them down, but in the end, there were so many that he could not fight all of them. So they cut his right hand, but he said, by doing this, you are not going to stop me from defending my faith. He was doing it out of faith. What this is portraying to us is that it's an example for the followers of Al-Imam Hussein, the followers of Ahlul Bayt, to fight for them, to protect their knowledge, to protect their word in as much as they can for the sake of faith and for the sake of Islam. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, fi amanillah, wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all. Better friends than you, but anyone stay here won't be left tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. A deep silence filled the air. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is the text of the speech delivered on June the 28th, 2022, by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the head of the judiciary branch and a number of the top officials and employees of the judiciary. The last thing I would like to recommend is for you to follow up on the files you open and to finish them. Finish the various cases involving public affairs that the judiciary has started. For example, about some factories, some illegal seizures, and the like. You shouldn't open a wound and then not finish it up. Of course, there is usually a big commotion in the beginning when something like this is being done. Then it is slowly forgotten. Whatever you start, whatever issue it is, he mentioned central issues are very good. Especially pursue these because of their priority. Finish the matter and complete the cases. Then you can move aside. Your work is hard, truly hard. Indeed, the work of the judiciary is one of the jobs that is very difficult. I have been in the ongoing executive affairs of the revolution since the beginning of the revolution. I have always said that I am afraid of accepting to be in charge of matters related to the judiciary branch, and I have avoided doing so because this is a very difficult job and it is very demanding.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
You have taken on much work on yourselves. Well, the reward for this is just as much. That is, in proportion to the amount of the work that is done, the divine reward that is given is also just as much, inshallah. Follow up on the work that is being done for the sake of God. Follow up on work while benefiting from divine guidance. God willing, inshallah, you will be given the divine reward. You may do a good action at times and no one realizes it, not even your manager or your boss. Your subordinates may not understand what you have done either. For example, you may have worked a few hours over time, or maybe you did a job carefully, or perhaps you fought diligently with corruption and dishonesty. No one may realize what you have done, but the scribes of God realize. Furthermore, the Almighty God is present and watching over all of this himself. God willing, your reward is with Allah. I hope that God the Almighty will make the pure soul of the great Imam Khomeini happy and unite the pure souls of the martyrs with the friends of God. May God unite the soul of dear Shaheed Beheshti with the friends of God, God willing, inshallah, and may he bless us all with a good end to our lives. May God's greetings, mercy and blessings be upon you.
Allah, I want to thank you. That you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
In the limelight. Military posturing in the Asia-Pacific also risks nuclear war and the potential extinction of the human species, says Anne Wright, former U.S. diplomat who resigned in March 2003 in opposition to the war on Iraq, in an article published under the heading "Largest Ever U.S. NATO Naval War Drills in Pacific, a Threat to Both Peace and Marine Life." Stay tuned for more. While the world's attention is focused on the crisis in Eastern Europe, halfway around the world, in the Pacific Ocean, confrontation of the U.S. and NATO toward China and North Korea is taking an increasingly military turn. The U.S. military's Indo-Pacific Command, headquartered in Honolulu, Hawaii, Rim of the Pacific, or RIMPAC 2022, military war games will have 38 ships from 26 countries, 4 submarines, 170 aircraft, and 25,000 military personnel practicing naval war maneuvers in the Hawaiian waters from June 29th to August 4th, 2022. Additionally, ground units from 9 countries will come ashore on the islands of Hawaii in amphibious landings. Many citizens of the 26 RIMPAC countries do not agree with their country's participation in the RIMPAC war games, calling them provocative and dangerous for the region. The Pacific Peace Network, with members from countries and islands across the Pacific, including Guam, Jeju Island, South Korea, Okinawa, Japan, Philippines, Northern Mariana Islands, Aotearoa in New Zealand, Australia, Hawaii, and the United States, demand that RIMPAC be cancelled, calling the naval armada dangerous, provocative, and very destructive. The network's petition for cancellation of RIMPAC states that RIMPAC dramatically contributes to the destruction of the ecology system and aggravation of the climate crisis in the Pacific region. RIMPAC war forces will blow up decommissioned ships with missiles, endangering marine mammals such as humpback whales, dolphins, and Hawaiian monk seals, and polluting the ocean with contaminants from the vessels. Land forces will conduct ground assaults that will tear up beaches where green sea turtles come to breed. The petition rejects the massive expenditure of funds on war making when humanity is suffering from lack of food, water, and other life-sustaining elements. Human security is not based on military war drills, but on care for the planet and its inhabitants. Other citizen groups in the Pacific region are adding their voices to the call to cancel RIMPAC. In its statement about RIMPAC, the Hawaii-based Women's Voices, Women Speak declared that RIMPAC causes ecological devastation, colonial violence, and gun worship. RIMPAC's ship sinking, missile testing, and torpedo blasting have destroyed island ecosystems and distributed sea creatures' well-being. This convening of military personnel promotes toxic masculinity, sex trafficking, and violence against local populations. Thank you. In a June 14, 2022 opinion piece in the Honolulu Star Advertiser, the only statewide newspaper in Hawaii, three local activists with the Hawaii Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines wrote, "We are one with the people of Hawaii in opposing the U.S.-led wars for which Balikatan, U.S.-Philippine ground war maneuvers, and RIMPAC are warm-ups. As it is, the governments bring together the people of Hawaii and the people of the Philippines to prepare for war, death, and destruction. Military posturing in the Asia-Pacific also risks nuclear war and the potential extinction of the human species. We must instead work toward global cooperation to address the threat of climate change and biodiversity loss to build toward peace, life, and coexistence," unquote. The citizens' petition to cancel RIMPAC has individual signatures and organizational endorsers from around the world. RIMPAC includes military forces from Australia, Brunei, Canada, Chile, Colombia, Denmark, Ecuador, France, Germany, India, Indonesia, the Zionist regime, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, Netherlands, New Zealand, Peru, the Republic of Korea, the Republic of the Philippines, Singapore, Sri Lanka, Thailand, Tonga, the UK, and the US. 40% of RIMPAC participants are either in NATO or have NATO ties. Six of the 26 RIMPAC countries are members of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, including Canada, Denmark, France, Germany, the UK, and the US, while four other participating countries are Asia-Pacific partners of NATO, including Australia, Japan, South Korea, and New Zealand. In the Pacific, NATO forces coming into the region greatly increased the tension with China and North Korea. Military-naval events, both in practice and in war, are dangerous for humans and for marine mammals. Scores of dolphins have turned up dead on the coast of the Black Sea from that war. The intense ship noise and low-frequency sonars interfere with the dolphins' main means of communication. Disruptive underwater noises may either have them end up losing their way in large fishing nets or around the Black Sea shores. The Turkish Marine Research Foundation announced recently that more than 80 dolphins were found dead across the country's western Black Sea coast, an extraordinary increase in the number of marine mammals found dead in a typical year. A recent video from the Black Sea documents some of the 80 dead dolphins. Several studies in the past have confirmed that military sonars are harmful to marine life, and many militaries have adopted mitigating measures to protect wildlife. Whales and dolphins have been killed in U.S. military war exercises by sonars and bombs. In March 2000, the U.S. Navy admitted that its use of a high-intensity sonar system caused 16 beaked and mink whales to be stranded on beaches in Bahama shortly after U.S. Navy ships using high-intensity sonar had passed by. Six of the whales died, and autopsies on the mammals revealed bleeding around the whale's inner ears and, in one instance, in the brain. 10 whales were pushed back into the sea, but the declining sightings of beaked whales led researchers working in the area to believe that many more may have died. The Navy and the National Marine Fisheries Service, NMFS, launched a series of investigations with the interim synopsis of the reports concluding that the bleeding was caused by sound waves produced by high-intensity sonar. with almost twice as many military ships arriving in the Hawaiian waters than the Russian Navy has in the Black Sea, the dangerous effects of the RIMPAC war maneuvers on dolphins, whales, and fishes will be substantial. The effect of RIMPAC military war exercises on international relations in the Pacific region may also have dangerous, intended or unintended consequences that could put the region into ever-increasing military confrontation instead of dialogue. Major cities in Asia, including Beijing, Shanghai, Hong Kong, Seoul, Tokyo, Pyongyang and Moscow, could be targeted and destroyed by ballistic missiles from the U.S. and NATO. In the United States, Honolulu, Haganta, Guam, Washington, D.C., New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Diego, Seattle, Houston could be targeted by missiles from other countries. Cities in Europe, including London, Paris, Rome, Madrid, Amsterdam, could be damaged or destroyed. Military responses to perceived national security issues by any of the countries in the region, whether it be North Korea, China, Russia, or the United States, will be disastrous for peoples over the entire planet. Experts must not let the governments continue confrontation instead of dialogue to resolve national security issues. The lives of people around the world are at stake. Experts must not let those who make money and political status out of war win again and start another horrific war for peace.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The Israeli regime has sealed its crossings with the Gaza Strip since Tuesday, further exacerbating the humanitarian situation in the impoverished territory. Currently, there are two Israeli-controlled crossings into the tiny coastal territory, the Kerem Shalom commercial crossing, located on the southernmost tip of the Gaza Strip, and the Erez pedestrian crossing in northern Gaza. The crossings have been partially operating since Israel imposed a tight blockade on Gaza in 2007.
The Israel closure of the crossings for the third day has serious, severe implications on the lives of the Palestinians in Gaza Strip. We are calling on the international community for immediate actions to pressure Israel to lift the blockade in Gaza.
The impoverished coastal territory already suffers from high poverty and unemployment rates. Most Gazans also depend on handouts from international aid agencies to survive.
Closing the crossing point from the Israeli occupation, it's a collective punishment. It's part of blackmail against Palestinian people. Over 2 million people living in Gaza, they are living in the huge jail. The social and economic situation so deteriorated.
For 15 years, the Israeli regime has kept an illegal and inhumane closure on the Gaza Strip, affecting the lives of more than 2 million Palestinians and restricting their freedom of movement.
Gaza crisis, due to the Israeli continuous blockade for 15 years, suffering from serious implications on the economy, on the humanitarian conditions, the employment, food insecurity, poverty, increased to unprecedented percentages.
Tel Aviv's move to shut down the crossings will further complicate living conditions in the impoverished territory. According to human rights groups, the Israeli blockade has wreaked havoc on the economy of Gaza and worsened its humanitarian conditions. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
French President Emmanuel Macron has reached the one